Hey everyone, on this episode of 6 Degrees with Mike McKenna, I'm joined by Tommy Soderstrom. Now, I know I had to dig a bit in the archives to find Tommy and get a hold of him, but I tell you what, it was worth it. Some of the most legendary gear to ever play in the NHL, from the big helmet and cage combination to the Pro 90Z Heatons to the brown pads, all white, played with the Philadelphia Flyers, with the New York Islanders, played a lot of international for Team Sweden, and a few years back home as well. Here's Tommy the Gambler. Enjoy. Tommy, thanks so much for joining me today. Always talking shop with another goalie is really exciting.
Yeah. Hello, Mike, and thanks for having me here. And if my English is not the best one, it's because I haven't spoken a long time, but I'm going to try to do my best.
So. It makes it endearing, man. People love that. The accent's always the best part of having somebody from a different place.
Yeah, I remember that when I come over. And the girl said, I love your accent, Tommy, when I was like 23, my first year when I come over. But yeah, I like to speak English when I can.
So you fell in love with America right away then, right?
Yeah, pretty much. No, I didn't. But I like the girls, though. But that's another story. And but the best girls are the Swedish girls, I tell you that.
Yeah, well, my
offense to the... No offense to the American girls, but because I'm from Sweden and that's the way it is. Yeah, and then I know when there was like the World Championship in Sweden, I know the Canadian team and the American team, they love the Swedish girls also.
Yeah, that was always...
I don't say any more than that.
That was so disappointing for me that I never got a chance to do like World Juniors or World Championships. I was on the roster for the U.S. team, asked to do it one year, and it was going to be in Finland and Sweden. Okay. And my first daughter was set to be born right in the middle of the tournament. And I chose not to go because I didn't want to be in Europe and miss her birth. And that was my one opportunity that I missed out on.
Yeah, okay. How old was you then?
I was in my 30s. So this was kind of like last kick at the can if you're going to wear the jersey. And I had to pass on it, which was disappointing. So
you missed a lot because all the players and people that love like Stockholm. When there are when they play in Stockholm, it's a beautiful city. It's like Vancouver, maybe. Pretty much a lot of water downtown and stuff. So
yeah, I've had so many Swedish teammates. It's always been bucket list for me to get over there. We're just getting warmed up with Tommy Soderstrom, but first, the NFL season is in full swing. You might not be at the game this year, but you can still be in on the action at Bet Online. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than any other place online. The online casino, it never closes. So head to betonline.ag today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Again, it's betonline.ag and sign up today. Here's more with Tommy Soderstrom. I want to dive back into your amateur career before you ever came to the U.S. You know, you had a really good World Juniors, played in Sweden for a little while, and then you're an 11th round pick of the Philadelphia Flyers, 214th overall.
Yeah, you know,
when they made that selection, did you expect, I'm going right to the NHL someday? Or did you think, maybe it's on the horizon, maybe I'll get there? You know, what was your focus at the time?
I was so surprised that I was drafted in the first place. And I don't know when it was. Maybe you have better check on that than me. Was it 89 I got drafted or 90? I don't know.
Well, it was so important that you don't remember the year. It was 1990.
Yeah, I know, but it was the 90? Okay.
Yes.
So let's see. Then I was like a second goalie in the Swedish league on a team, my team Djurgården, the season 89 to 90. And then the season 90 to 91, I become the starter because the goalie I played with the season before, he was my big idol. I wrote him a letter when I was like 14, 15, and I get an answer from him, and I get a card, idol card. And so for me, it was really, really nice to play with my idol. So first I played with my idol on Djurgården, and then I played with him in the national team. First in, the World Championship 91, and then Canada Cup 91.
Wow.
So that was... But he left the team after the season 89-90. So then I get to start. And from that on, my career started to grow.
So when you were a young goalie growing up, were you idolizing Swedish goalies? Did you look across the pond to the NHL? You know, who were your heroes? What drew you to being a goaltender?
My hero was the guy I play with, Rolf Riddervall, and he played for Djurgården and he played for the national team. So he was my only idol when I grew up. So I never look over to America. And I know that Pelle Lindberg had been playing there, but I think he died like 86 or something, 87, I don't know. So my only idol was Rolf Riddervall.
What made you want to be a goaltender?
Actually, I was small and no muscles. So we play like street hockey where I lived. And one of my friend's father was a coach for the team where we lived. So he asked me the last practice of the year, like, we just have one keeper on the team. Do you want to try it? So then I tried it and then I liked it. So I always been in net. And like I said, small guy, no muscles. Just put me in that. I like that.
So it was some guys, it's just like equipment. Some people, they weren't great skaters. For you, it was just, hey, I get a chance to play.
Yeah, pretty much. And I liked it from the get-go. It was, it fit me and my style, I guess. So, yeah.
I mean, you were a pretty acrobatic goaltender. Did you play other sports growing up?
I play soccer. And then I played golf. But I don't know if you... Golf counts like sports when you're young. I don't know.
That's hand-eye. It all plays into being a goaltender. So you touched on Canada Cup really quick. And I look at that in 1991. That seems like it may have been a turning point in your career. Maybe that led to, you know, some of the future success you had in the NHL. First, what was that tournament like? And then second, you took a huge slap shot to the face. Steve Larmer winds up a clapper that dents your mask. You're bleeding and you keep playing. What are your memories from that tournament?
It's like you said, I think that's why Philadelphia want me to come over after that season, even if this was like in August or September, I guess. But I played with the national team 91 in the... Let's see, in the spring, and we won the world championship, but I was just the second or third goalie there. And then we come to the Canada Cup in the autumn, and we played, I think I played two or three games before this game, Steve Larmer game.
That's what it's known as to you, is the Steve Larmer game?
Yeah, the semifinals. But it was a big, big shot, and like a... You can see I couldn't even blink. I was falling like a bull. And I have a picture of it when the trainer, I think is in, or doctor, and then Börje Salming is standing by me. And it was a great memory. And for me, it was good, because if he should have hit me not on the cage, hit the helmet instead, I would be knocked out for the game. Yeah. So I was lucky there.
So what did you do with the cage? Because it bent in.
Yeah, the trainer, he just bent it out.
He just hammered it out.
I had two black eyes the next day, and my nose was hurting like hell.
Did it feel like somebody punched you?
Yeah, it looked like that.
So it looked like you'd been in a bar fight, but you'd actually been playing goalie in the Canada Cup.
Yeah. And I remember we were like 2 or 3 weeks in Toronto, and we played like every third or fourth game. So it was like really like a vacation there. And the crowd was amazing in Toronto. And so I think we played two games against Canada in Toronto. So that was a big, big memory for me. And like we talked before, my roommate was... Tommy Albelin. So I think he was like, what do you say? When I was spoke to the press afterwards, he needed to, what do you say, inter...
He had to translate for you.
Yeah, because I was so bad on English.
Well, Tommy's awesome, man. He was my assistant coach in the Devils organization. Love the guy. And you had some really, really famous teammates on that club. Right? Correct me if I'm wrong. Hawk and Lube was on that team. Is that right?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
Matt Sundin.
Börje Salming.
Yeah.
Börje Salming, Matt Sundin, Ulf Samuelsson, Kjell Samuelsson, Thomas Sandström,
yeah,
Mats Näslund. It was a lot of guys. Bengt-Åke Gustafsson, who played for Washington earlier.
I played with both the Samuelson kids that are still playing now.
Oh, so okay.
Out of that grouping of guys, who was the hardest to stop in practice? Who really caught your eye?
I guess it was Mats Sundin, even if he was so young then. But, you know, he shoot the wrong way for the goalies. Not for you, maybe, but for me.
In America, right-handed is normal.
Okay, yeah. But I think they are the toughest shooters, especially when it comes to breakaways.
Yeah.
I had always tougher with Mats Sundin guys.
And he had that super long reach too, eh? Like really tall, long reach. I'm sure he was probably deceptive in where he would release the puck from.
Yeah. And he always took the puck over to his back end and then just shut it up in the top roof. So he was tough to stop.
Yeah. Well, you come over and suddenly you're in North America. Philadelphia Flyers sign you. But before you can even play, correct me if my timeline's wrong on this, they discovered a heart condition that you had to have corrected and have several surgeries. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. And I come over after the World Championship. I played the Olympics 92 in February. I was really bad. So I figured maybe they don't want to have me over. But they have seen me in the Canada Cup. And I think that's more important because it's a small rink and all the guys we played there was just big stars. And then I played the World Championship 92 and we won. And I played really good at tournament. So I come over and, but the thing why they signed me also was because they traded Hextall to Quebec for Lindros, if you remember.
That's great. In the big deal, yeah.
Yeah, and the big deal with the draft for Peter Forsberg and $50 million, I guess.
Yep.
And so they just had one keeper. So then they signed me. So it was lucky for me. So actually, I've been maybe traded for Hextall twice.
Right, because it happened later with the Islanders too.
Yes. So I come over and I figure like, oh, I'm a pretty good goalie. I won the World Championship. I won the National Championship and different stuff. And when I come over, it was a total different game for me. I remember when I come over like a month before training camp because they asked me. So Bill Barber, he was shooting at me, if you remember that. He was a big hero in Philly.
Yep.
He was shooting at me, just him and me alone. And he shoot really hard, but he was old. So I figured, what the heck do they shoot this hard over here? But and then we started training camp. And my first game in training camp was against Quebec, and you guess how many goals I let down?
Well, I would like to guess zero, but no, I'm gonna put the over 10. Under at 4. Oh, 10. Double digits.
Put the one before the zero. So after 10 goals, they pulled me out of the game. And I remember, I think Mats Sundin did scored a couple of goals, and they just pulled me when 10 minutes left of the game. So I was like, what the heck is this? 10 goals, my first preseason games. But and then the second game, I played against, I think, New Jersey or something. It was like down 1-4 after half the game. So I'm like, come on, do I suck really this bad? But then it ended 1-4. But after that, I had my, they figure out my heart condition. So they didn't let me play. And then after, they said that I need to rest and then I'm going to have surgery for my heart. And so I could go back to Sweden for maybe a month or two. So my start of my NHL career was not really that good.
Yeah, but the season went well after that once you finally came back.
And yeah, it did. It did.
I look at that roster. I look at the coaching staff, Bill Dineen, legendary coach. You had Ken Hitchcock as an assistant coach. I had him as a head in Dallas and I can still hear him. I'm on the bench and you got to get it deep, guys. I can hear him screaming. Did you hear that with him as an assistant coach?
No, I never have memories of him. But after my surgeries, they just sent me down to Hershey. So I was in Hershey for maybe 7 or 8 games or something. And they told me to get an apartment down there. So I get an apartment in Harrisburg.
Yeah.
It's like 20
minutes
away.
It's the capital of Pennsylvania.
Yeah, it is. I liked it. So I stayed at the place called Old City Hall. And actually, I looked that up once in a while when I missed America to see where I stayed at my first apartment. And so I was there in Hershey for maybe a month. I don't know. But I liked it. The fans were great and the rink was so good. Old. It was an old barn, but it was cool.
Were lucky to go to one of the best places in the American League. You're lucky to go to one of the best places in the American League. Hershey's an awesome place to play.
Okay. Yeah, it was awesome to play. But then I get called up because I think Rossell, Dominic get hurt or something. So I was up on the bench, and then I don't know if they sent me back, and then I come up again. So, and then I did my first game against Pittsburgh. I think it was December 18th. See what I remember. And they had Lemieux and they had Jagger. And I remember it was a big, big fight after 10 minutes in the first period. Gloves was all over my zone. And but I think we lost the game 5-4 in overtime or something like that. But after that, I started, I think that's still some record, because I started 22 straight games after my first rookie start.
You were the man.
I figured that's not pretty common, because you can maybe start one or two or three games and then the other guys start. But they let me start, I think it was 22 games. But I know Bill Dineen, he liked me, really.
Must have.
Yeah.
So what was the difference that you found coming from European hockey to the North American rink?
It was like when the puck come in over the blue line, it's always like a scoring chance. So that's the big difference for a goaltender. But I like that, because you get a lot of shots, and we weren't the best team in Philly. I saw a lot of action. I like that.
You may not have been the best team, but look at some of the names in that roster. Mark Recchi, Brindamore, Eric Lindros, Kevin Dineen.
Yes. We had Mark Recchi. He was such a nice guy, Mark Recchi. And like you said, Kevin Dineen, Brindamore, Lindros, Gary Galley.
Yeah.
Stuff. So, yeah, we had a great team.
But, we have a lot of crossover there. Kevin Dineen coached me when I was in Portland in the American League, and I played with Mark Recchi in Tampa.
Oh, did you? Okay.
Yep, towards the end of his career.
He's such a nice guy.
Yeah, he was awesome to me. And I was completely fish out of water in Tampa my first year. He was super cool. And I think he's a really, really underappreciated player. Even though he's in the Hall of Fame, people don't realize how good Mark Recchi was, I don't think.
Didn't he score like 40, 50 goals a lot of seasons?
Yeah, just like casually potted 50 goals.
Yeah.
Regularly.
Yeah. Yeah, he was a great guy. And I remember he come to me like after some of the after games and stuff. Then when we're going to practice, he said like, Tommy, take a day off. You need to rest because you've been playing us a lot. And I said, hey, I can't do that. That looked really bad to do that. And he said, no, it's no problem. I tell the other guys that I told you to do so. So, yeah.
You said that you didn't have any muscles and you played with Rod Brindamore. Did he grab you and take you in the locker room and try to teach you the ways?
That's the guy. I've never seen a guy who's, what do you say? Muscles and no fat on his body. He was such in good shape, that guy. And nice guy also.
And this was Lindros' first year, you know?
Yeah, he was. We come the same year.
What was it like to see him come in? Yeah, I mean, that was kind of a strange situation, right? With the whole draft and everything else. Did it seem like it was an easy transition for him coming into Philadelphia?
I think so. It looks like that. And he was a mature guy. And was he 18 or 19 or something like that?
Yeah, I think he was 18 right out of junior.
Yeah. And he was a great player and a nice person. And I played with his brother also on Islanders, but he didn't play many years though because all the injuries headed to his head, Brett Lindros.
Right. So. When you came across the pond,
yeah,
you were instantly recognizable, and I'm sure you know where I'm going with this, because you had what looked like a space helmet on, the old Jofa helmet with the huge cage. I'd never seen a cage like that before in my life. And I don't think anybody in North America had either. What's the backstory on that combo?
No, but I had it from the get-go in Sweden. So I never used the mask because it was too claustrophobic. And so I grew up with that mask when I start to, being an adult. So, but it was butt ugly. And I know all the players, they were laughing at me at the other team. And I remember that they call it the bird cage because it was like big. And but I for me, I saw the puck better. And when I tried to use a mask like once in a while on practice, but I couldn't see the puck good. And I was scared also because the, what do you call it? The shield for the neck.
The dangler.
Not the neck. The dangler. And, I like that on my Jofa combo.
I mean, it was so big. That's the thing. We'd seen cages before, and take Dominic Hasek's, for instance. It was kind of a normal straight cage. It ended at his chin, but yours was huge. You know, it looked like a barbecue grill that we hadn't seen something that big before. So the other team would probably give it to you nonstop in the game.
Yeah, they were laughing. Like, I saw it on the pregame skate in the morning, but for me, I couldn't care less. I liked it. And nowadays, these days on Facebook, I get a lot of proposals if I have extra of these, because now I'm in some of groups on Facebook that, old school hockey and stuff like that.
Vintage, yeah.
Vintage, yeah. And so now they pay big bucks if they could get them from Sweden, because they're pretty tough to get.
Tommy, you're a folk hero.
I don't know. No, I don't think so. But equipment.
The other thing that you had was you didn't use tape on the blade of your stick.
Yeah.
It was because the
stick glide better on the ice, and I was no good passer or shooter with my stick. So I figure, like, what the heck, do it without tape.
Did you play your whole career without tape on the blade?
No, I didn't. But I don't know if I had it when I come over or if it was after. I don't remember.
So you weren't very worried about making passes?
No, I didn't. I was so bad on passes. That was like a shame when it come to that. But it was okay, like in the zone or stuff. But never more. I couldn't get the puck up to the plexiglass. So, I was no Hextall, I can tell you that.
When you were younger, you had an incredibly colorful set of heat and gear, I think with your garden.
Yeah.
And then when you got older,
Canada Cup.
Yeah, right. I mean, it was yellow, blue, red. But when you got older, you switched to all white equipment. Was that on purpose?
No, I don't know why, actually. I loved my color. Like you said, with the Swedish team and the Canada Cup 91. I thought it was really beautiful. But then I changed to white. But I don't know the story behind it. So I'm sorry about that. But that's the way. I don't know if they didn't do it over to Canada or NHL. I don't know. But I like the white after that. So it was okay, though.
Lots more to come with Tommy Soderstrom. But first, a word from sponsor Hico Sticks. You like playing catch? Of course, we all do. Well, here's a way that you can improve your hand-eye coordination, reaction speed, and overall cognitive development by using Hico Sticks. It stands for Hand-Eye Coordination Sticks. In 2020, it was named the best coordination tool by Men's Health Magazine, certified non-toxic, EVA foam construction, super lightweight. They even float. You can use them at the pool, at the beach, tons of fun. Listen, I use them to help my goaltending. They can help tennis players, baseball players. My daughters love to just throw it back and forth to one another in the backyard. Each leg of the Hico Sticks, there's three of them, has a different color. So when you toss it, you call out a color, you can say which hand to catch it with, and the person receiving has to process that information while it's in the air. It's a great tool for hand-eye coordination. If you go to HicoSticks.com, use the promo code 60MM56, that'll get you 10% off at checkout. HicoSticks.com. I've always wondered this about Europeans. All the gear is made in North America, or at least it used to be back then. So when you would go to order heat and equipment in 1990, What was the process to do that?
It was, I'm not really exactly know the process, but I remember they asked me, the guy who had an agent for Heaton in Sweden, he said like, yeah, do you want to go with Heaton gears? And the spoiler, they had the spoiler on the front.
Yep.
And I said, yeah, why not? And they just gave me a set of pads and gloves and all that stuff. And I liked Heaton. They were really nice.
Was there anything special about the pads that you had? Were they pretty much off the shelf, or did you really customize all your equipment?
I think it was just off the shelf, I guess. I had pretty short. I don't know if I had 29s or 30s.
Really? Like, Tommy, yeah. Do you know what size pads we're wearing nowadays?
45s.
Well, no, that was Garth Snow.
Okay.
The max was 38 inches for a while. Everybody was at that. And then they made all the sizing according to our bodies. So most people now are in pads somewhere between 35 to 36 inches or so. It's pretty normal in the NHL.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. If 1 inch is 3 centimeters, pretty much 2. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
The conversion.
Yeah. If I had that, I couldn't move if I had these long pads, but
So you like the short thigh rise just for maneuverability. It was easier to get around the crease in them.
Yeah. Yes, of course. I guess my Kelly Rudy pads, I guess he had pretty short pads also. I don't know which size, but they look pretty small.
Were your knees exposed? Did you have knee guards?
Actually, for a while I didn't wear any knee guards because I thought they were too thick in the pads. And I had my pads pretty soft, strangled to my legs. And so I was out for a while. I don't know if I ended my career with knee pads or not, but I'm sure in NHL, I didn't have them. So.
Was there anything worse than taking one off the knee like that? It's crippling.
Oh, I hated that. It was so hurting. But usually I never go down that way. So, because I always did my, we call it threat jack. I don't know, when you go down and do a save, the way I used to do it. But once in a while I did wrong. So I get hit on my knees, but, it's a tough game.
You were not what I would call a butterfly goaltender at all. No, didn't come in until later. What was the foundation of your game?
What do you mean foundation?
Like, how did you like to play the game? Did you prefer to stay on your skates to move into shots that way out of your crease, deep in your crease? You know, what really did you find the most success with when you played?
Yeah, because I was a small goalie, I always took help from the bar in the middle of the goal back.
I saw you used to rest on that. Yeah.
Yeah. I was always back in my net. And that was because I had my spine on the, on the bar in the back. So when I go out from the net, I know I'm in the middle of the goal. And my style was to go out far and then just backwards with the shooter.
To have backward flow as they were coming at you.
Yeah, and I loved that when it was like a breakaway. And I thought I was pretty good on breakaways because I could read and I was pretty quick. And I like to stand on my skates. So
you have to be a confident skater to do that. And I always felt like breakaways, I like to play out with a lot of flow like you just described because I wanted the shooter to go around me. You know, I didn't want them to see any net and have an opportunity to beat me with a shot because I knew if I had flow and I was skating that I could get to the post and that was going to give me a chance to make the save on it.
Yeah. Yeah. I see what you mean. And the thing is like, it was lucky for me that I played in the 90s because if I come up now, I wouldn't have a career at all because you can be small, but my style is dead now. You don't see any goalie who's standing up now. Everybody's butterfly all the time.
Yeah.
So, like I used to say, like back in the 90s, the goalies did make the save. Now it's more the puck come to the goalie because we were so small in the net. We needed to make the save on a different way. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. Do you still like watching hockey? And like, do you still appreciate what the goalies are doing today's game?
The goalies are so good today and they're in good shape. The only thing I don't really like these days is more like pretty much all the goalies look the same. Because
there's not much personality, is there?
They have the same style pretty much. And before, on the 90s, you didn't need to see the head on the goalie. You just saw on the pads which goalie it was. You see, you know what I mean? If I saw it on TV or whatever. Now the goalies look pretty much the same. Yeah, and that's not bad, though, because there's so much, their stats are so much better than I have. But it's a different game for a goalie today, I guess. And the goalies are pretty, they're like... I don't know what I was in inches, but I was like 175 centimeters.
5'10" or so.
Yeah, now they're like 20 centimeters bigger than I was. And they cover so much more net these days. But they shoot much harder now also. So it's a completely different game for a goaltender, I think. I don't know. What do you think?
Totally agree with you. I mean, from the time I started playing, I bet you're the same way. I can still do a skate save. I'm 37 years old. But if you put 20 pucks at the blue line, I can turn my skate out, put those pucks in the corner. I didn't make a skate save past the age of probably 12.
Okay.
But I can still do them. I mean, that was the amount of change in the game from when I started. Stand up. And then we started to go down and make saves. And then we realized what leg to recover with. And now we have things called post integrations. Like there's just... there's so much now that goalies have to mentally process that if they don't have coaching at a young age, they're in trouble. And it's actually sad though, because it's kind of taken that free form feeling out of the game for goalies, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I think the goalies these days, they go much on like, what do you say? Percentage.
Yeah.
Right. Like if I do this in this angle, I'm going to like 9 out of 10, I'm going to save or whatever. But what happened with the slide? Do you call it sliding in America? Do you know what I mean? The sliding save, like when you put your whole body, like
the two-pad stack. Yeah. You're talking about the two-pad stack, Tommy.
Like Tommy Salo did 94 in the penalty shot against Korea.
Yep.
Have you seen that one?
Absolutely. I remember he came and it was on the breakaway with the two-pad stack like that.
Yeah.
Well, that's one of my most famous saves of the NHL. I don't have many of those, but two seasons ago, I had one in overtime against the Boston Bruins. So that's my claim to fame is a two-pad stack.
Cool.
The vintage goalie in me dug deep to make that save.
Yeah, it is. And I love that save, but it doesn't work this way these days pretty much, I guess. But
was it a shock after two seasons in Philadelphia to be traded to Long Island?
Yeah, it was actually, but... I could see it coming because my first year, I had a really good season after my heart operations. But and then I signed a new contract for 4 years. And then my second year, the sophomore year, I was so bad. I don't know what my stats are. Are they 4 goals against or something? I don't know. And 86 or so I was terrible the second season. So I figured that it could happen. But I was still in shock because it was during training camp.
Yeah.
But that's the way it is in the business. So.
Do you think you just lost confidence?
My second year? I don't think so. Maybe it was more that I was like so happy with my first year, and then I get back then it was a big contract for me. Signing 4 years, so I figured maybe I was a little too, what do you say, full in my stomach.
Yeah, you're a little full of yourself, right? Your ego was high. You thought, hey, I can do this. It's no problem.
Yeah, and then I couldn't stop a beach ball that season, so it was terrible. But that's the way it works.
Kevin Dineen said that you are the most relaxed goalie that he ever played with.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
Well, you get to Long Island, and before we started getting on air today, you were talking about how playing with Jamie McLennan, it was really high strung. Like, he was complete opposite of you. What were your thoughts when you met Jamie and how he prepared for games?
Yeah, he was like prepared for the games before the morning skate, same day the game was. I was like, okay, how is he gonna hold 82 games if he gonna what do you say, so much energy so early on the day? But that's the way he was, and I was the opposite. So whatever works for itself, for him and for me, it was good. So
Jamie mentioned that you guys were roommates once, and that's when he found out how much you loved the stock market, because you woke up early at 3 a.m. so you could get on the stock market in Sweden. And Jamie's sitting there, and he's not sure, because it was in Swedish, but thinking that you're going buy, 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 sell, sell, sell. Had you been into the stock market for a while?
Yeah, I've been like since I was like 16, 17. So for me, it was like, it was like a daily routine. But back then I was like buying and selling stocks. But now these days I'm just holding it. So, and I figured out pretty early that that was the best way to buy good stocks and just run with them and buy more when it dips. So,
well, Tommy, we could talk about this all day, man. I've got a degree in economics, the Warren Buffett way, find good companies, hold on to them. What you described when you were younger was really gambling, right? When you're just buying, selling. But that seemed to go with your personality. Several old teammates said that you were like a professional roulette player and that you had this system that you thought could beat the house. Can you clue us into what that might have been?
Yeah, you have done a good research. I hear that. I love statistics and stuff. So I thought I had good systems on roulette. And when I played in Philly, I went down to Atlantic City once in a while. But my systems need you to sit at the table like for 5, 6, 7 hours. And I had tried them, but not for long enough to see if it works. Because for me, the stock market, it's much more fun and generates much more money. So I never really tried it full out, but I think if I did, it should work, but you never know.
When did the nickname Tommy the Gambler come?
I don't know, actually. Maybe some of them called me that, but it's a long time. I maybe forget it.
We are rolling right along with Tommy Soderstrom, but first, I want to talk to you about Skin Effects Wraps, designed and produced by Mark Magnanti, based out of Rochester, New York. Small company, American company, professional vinyl wrapping, specializing in goalie masks. If you want a quick, affordable way to make your mask look good, I cannot recommend Mark enough at Skin Effects Wraps. He did a fantastic job for me this year when I was in a bit of a pinch. I had an old mask that just didn't look good when I would occasionally be on the ice practicing with the Vegas Golden Knights. So Mark helped me out, made it look great. The turnaround time was outstanding. You wouldn't even hardly tell that it wasn't traditional paint. The wrap looks so good on the mask. So if you're looking for something, again, quick, affordable way to get your mask looking good, looking right for the team that you're on, hit up Skin Effects Wraps on Facebook, Instagram, or send Mark an email at skineffectswraps@gmail.com. Thanks to them for helping me out, and thanks for supporting 6 Degrees with Mike McKenna. Those years in Long Island must have been pretty wild. You know, that team wasn't great. Mike Milbury was the coach. Was he nice to his goaltenders? Did he treat you well?
Yeah, I don't think he was really bad. I remember he, like, when I get traded, it was like the lockout season, 94, 95. So I come there on training camp, and then maybe a couple of days later, it was the lockouts. I went back to Sweden, and then I come back in January. And then Jamie McLennan was the number one goalie. But then I started to play pretty good then. And we had, what's his name? 94, 95. What's the name of the coach? Fuck, I should know that. Sorry.
Lorne Henning.
Lorne Henning. Yes, thank you very much. He was such a nice guy. So then after, like, I started to play a lot more. And then at the end, I played more than Jamie that season. And then I flew back to Sweden after the season, say it was like a Tuesday. Lorne Henning called me in Tuesday morning, and I said, yeah, Tommy, next year you're going to start like a starting goalie. I believe in you, so just be in good shape and come back ready. And I said, yeah, that's nice to hear. Thank you very much.
Sounds good.
Fly back Tuesday night, buy a newspaper when I come to Stockholm Wednesday morning, and I see in the paper, Lorne Henning fired. Can you believe it? But like I said, if I was good enough, it shouldn't matter. But you know how it is for a goaltender. If you have the coach confidence, yep, it's much easier to be a goaltender.
Yep.
So then we got Milbury, and we get a letter sent home that summer that training camp is not going to be like anyone before. So be prepared. Be prepared. And then I come over, and yeah, he was a nice guy. He was a little crazy, but yeah.
What did he do that was crazy? When you say that somebody's crazy, there has to be something that you remember that tips you off to thinking that.
Yeah, but he could scream a lot, but I guess a lot of coaches could. But the coach I had before, like you said, Denine and Henning, they were more like calm guys. But I remember one time we have lost a couple of games. We went out to practice, and he said when we come out, the whole team, like, take off your jerseys. And everybody was looking, so, okay, what is he going to do now? And then he had like a lexicon in his hand, and he said, A, attitude. Also, and then he said what it meant, and he said, you guys have no fucking attitude. And then he whistled. And then it was like the idiot. Is that how you call it?
It was just pure skating back skating.
And forth. Yeah, back yep. and forth, back and forth. And then it was like B, whatever it was on B, and then it was on C, and then it was on D. And we didn't have anything to drink either. So we take snow from the ice.
Come on.
Yeah.
You're eating ice off the, you're yeah. eating snow off the ice. To,
yes, yes.
To get dehydrated.
And then I don't know how far he went on the letters, but after maybe an hour and 15, he blew the whistle, and then he went off the ice, pissed off like hell.
That's so wild.
Yeah.
Wow. But I got bagged without water in junior, but I wasn't eating snow.
But after an hour, you know, or 30 minutes, it's, yeah. Maybe he should have asshole on the A instead. You know what I mean? For him, that practice.
You know, you've got YouTube highlights out there. One of them is you taking that slap shot to the face. Another one, unfortunately, is your fight with Corey Schwab. This is in 1995. Wow. There's a big scrum. And from what I can tell, you go in to help a teammate out to just kind of pull him out of the pile. Next thing you know, Schwab's on top of you. What are your memories from that?
Yeah, I know Darius Kasparaitis, he was hurt in my zone, and the fight start, so they were like 5 against 4, so I just holding a guy in his pants from behind, it was like nothing, and then I didn't see him coming, Corey Schwab, from the other end, and he just took off my helmet, and I, you know, I had the glove on, my left right. glove, so he started to punch me in the face. But the thing was, I always been dreaming to be in a fight in NHL or in Sweden. So, and my only thing I was thinking about was that don't go down on ice like a sissy and protect yourself with a head.
Don't
so
turtle.
I was standing up.
No yeah, turtling turtle, allowed. Yeah.
So I was like standing up all the time, but I got hit a couple of times, and then I needed to maybe 6 or 7 stitches, and but I survived. But the bad thing with that was we're gonna play Philly the next day, so we're gonna go to Philly after the game because it was an afternoon game Saturday against New Jersey, and I'm gonna meet a girl there, like I know, but we hadn't hooked up before. But I was so pissed at my eye look like going a game against Tyson. So I canceled that date, and then we never saw each other after that. So that was the sad thing with the boxing against Corey Schwab.
Well, it could have been like Slapshot, where you showed up for the date and you had a black eye and you had stitches. Maybe she would have thought that was awesome.
Yeah, you never know.
Yeah, but I was like, yeah, it was hurting, and then I was tired after the game. So, but
was it interesting to have another Swedish goalie partner? I mean, you and Tommy Salo played together for a little bit, and there weren't a lot of Swedish goalies in the league at the time. So was that kind of unique?
Yeah, it was pretty special. And he was up my second year on Islanders, and then he was down a little and stuff like that. But then my last year, he was up and I was in the farm team. And yeah, we had pretty fun, but we weren't really that good. And none of us. So we had Bob Froese, a lovely guy. He's a priest now.
Really?
And or something with the church. And I remember he came in after, I think Sala got pulled and I got in, but I didn't play better. So he came in to the locker room. He was screaming at it. And he was not that kind of guy. So I was so surprised. So I said to him, like, do I look like a dog? And he was like, what do you mean? Yeah, you're screaming at us. And he started to laugh then. But yeah, he was a good guy either way. So
how did you decide it was time to head back to Sweden?
My last year, he told me, Milbury told me during the training camp that they're going to go with Salo and Eric Fischer. So I just sit there and wait. I was not in one preseason game at all. So I just practice when they go on the road, and I practice home with a couple of the guys. And then he decided that he's going to send me down. And so I hope that he's going to buy me out. But he didn't want to do that because I had a one-way contract. So he said, I know you can play in NHL, but we don't know how this guy is going to do the first year. So we're going to keep you for that. So they sent me to Salt Lake City. So I was there for a couple of months. And then I know after that my season is going to be over. And after my contract is going to end, I know I'm going to go back to my Swedish team in Stockholm. So I was just waiting. My last season was terrible. And then they borrowed me out to Rochester for a couple of games for their entire season. But before that, I had said to them that after the season, I'm going to go back as soon as the season ended. And so that's after that. After I told them that, they just let me go to Rochester. And I think Rochester paid big bucks for me to keep them through the playoffs. And I told them the same thing, that I'm just going to go back when the season is over. So they get so pissed at Milbury because he hadn't told them that. So after that, I was there for two games. And then they called my agent, and then they bought me out for the last 2 months or something like that.
Going back to Sweden, did you plan on playing a couple more years and retiring, or was it open-ended?
No, I wanted to play when I come back. So when I come back to Sweden, I signed a 5-year deal with my old team, and I loved it. Yeah, especially my first year. We went to the finals, but we lost the finals in the... It was just best of five then. So we lost that game, the fifth game at home in overtime. So it was a tough one. But after that year, I got voted MVP from the league. And it was like the players who did it. So it was a really, really honorable prize to get. But after that year, then I lost passion. I don't know what it was. If it was the stock market or if it was anything else. But... So my last two seasons, it was, So I quit actually when it was 2 years left of my contract. So I woke up to the general manager and I said, hey, you have won on Lotto now. And he said, what do you mean? Yeah, I'm going to quit. So you don't need to pay me for two more years. So you can use that money to other guys.
did it feel good to leave on your terms? Like, even though your passion was dead for the game, like, you still walked away the way you wanted to. Did you feel like you had any unfinished business left?
No. Right then and there and then, it was the best decision for me. If I could, I would have quit in the middle of the season. I was so fed up with hockey, and during the games I was thinking about other stuff, and so for me I was over and done. So half the season I was just on the bench, like from Christmas to April. I maybe played two or three games or something like that. So
did you know you were going to go right into day trading when you were done playing?
Yeah, or the stock market. Right. Back then, I had quit pretty much day trading. I was just in it for the long run.
It probably helped to already have your career path somewhat laid out in front of you to be able to walk away from hockey, though.
Yeah, that was nice. Of course.
There's a lot of guys that don't have that, man. Like, they don't know what to do when they retire.
Yeah. I think that's pretty much sad, because I know it's that for a lot of guys, but for me, it was one of my best days in life to say that, hey, I'm quit. Now I can do whatever I want. I have no time to, I need to be somewhere, or, you know how it is, games after games. And I loved it to just be free, like a free bird. And I haven't done anything since. So for me, it was a right decision then. But if I see it now, I could see, like, why didn't I fight a little more when I was in US? Why didn't I fight a little more when I, my last year in Sweden? But like I used to say, it's like there and then it felt like the best, like the right choice, the right decision. So I don't regret anything, but I quit when I was 30. So that was pretty young.
You made the return to competitive athletics late in life as a reality TV star. What can you tell me about this show that you did on TV in Sweden, The Champion of Champions? I can't pronounce it in Swedish. If you want to, go right ahead.
Yeah.
What was the deal with this show?
No, they have it every year. And usually they're like 12 people who has won something. It's like the Olympics, or it's a world championship, or whatever. And it's different sports, like could be swimming, could be soccer, could be tennis or whatever. So they asked me after, maybe it was the fourth season or something like that, if I wanted to be on the show. And it's really, really popular show in Sweden. And I know they have the same show in other countries in Europe with their own countrymen. And so I was there for, it was like 2 weeks or something like that. And then I went to the final and I come in second place. And you do different stuff. You do like climbing in the mountains and different stuff. And it was fun to meet other people in other sports. And it was a great experience.
I saw a picture recently of you in your old equipment playing street hockey.
Yeah.
Is that something you make a habit of?
No, it was like my neighbor where I live, their kids, they have a net, and they were out on the street. And I think this was like a Sunday. And they always been asking me, Tommy, can we be shooting on you, blah, blah, blah. But I have my stuff on my, under the roof.
In the attic.
In the attic, yeah. And I'm like, oh, fuck, I need to take it down from there. Because I usually never on ice either. I might be on ice like since I quit maybe 15 times, and I say, okay, what the heck. So I took them down and I put it on.
And you had the bird cage too.
Yeah, the bird cage, and I had a national team sweater. And then one of the parents asked me if they could put it on Facebook. And I said, yeah, what the heck, no problem for me. And then I asked them, like, can you send it to me also? Because I usually never post anything on Facebook, pretty rarely. And I put it out. And a lot of people thought it was fun and it was a good thing to do and stuff like that. So, but then it was one guy who said, like, how can you play with your hockey stuff on the street? You're going to get destroyed. And I said, yeah, take it easy. It was for like 30 minutes.
Yeah, and you live the dream in the NHL. You can do whatever you want with your gear. You don't need somebody else telling you otherwise. kind of what inspired me to get in touch with you, is just looking back and seeing that. And it looked like such a fun moment. And to see that vintage gear, it rekindled a lot of memories for me as a kid, and seeing you at the Flyers and Islanders. And This has just been really cool, man, to find out more about you, to get to talk for a little bit. I really, really appreciate you spending some time with me today.
Yeah, thank you. The same to be that you would like to have me on the show. I was really flattered when you asked me, so thank you very much.
If you enjoy 6 Degrees, please subscribe and rate in iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to all your podcasts. If you're interested in advertising on 6 Degrees with Mike McKenna, please contact Believe at BLEAV.com. As always, you can find me, Mike McKenna, on all the socials at MikeMcKenna56. I'm also available for online goalie coaching. If you want to find out more about that, head to 44visionhockey.com, fill out an application, and we'll set up an introductory Zoom meeting. Thanks for listening to 6 Degrees with Mike McKenna.